Well, before the coronavirus really made news around the world, there was one person who was saying that this was going to be a super big deal.
This is The Hot Zone. Engaging with the news in a whole new way, international war correspondent Chuck Holton brings insight into areas of crisis and lets you help those affected.
Was not going to be a big deal, but Michael Yan, war correspondent and author who lives over in Thailand, was sounding the alarm. And so I wanted to bring Michael on today and talk to him about the coronavirus and why he knew that this was going to be such a big deal. Michael, thanks for coming on with us.
Hey, Chuck. Good morning. It's what time is it here? It's 5:05 in the morning here in Chiang Mai, Thailand. I'm seeing protest. And so the Hong Kongers have been fighting against, you know, communist China for a long time. And it's very, and they're outnumbered, as you know, outgunned. They don't even have guns. And so then in December, well, you know, this may have broken out in roughly November-ish, may have been when CCP noticed the virus over in Wuhan. I don't know. Nobody quite seems to know. But sometime around November-ish, they started noticing. And then in December, certainly it was starting to come up on the radar. I was paying attention, but I was just at this point just kind of monitoring it. January 2020, I got some communication from a very good friend of mine who was, let's say, sort of dialed in, let's say. And since I was already watching the virus and he's telling me what he's saying, I said, okay, I think this is live fire. I'm not sure. It's clearly a real virus, but is it a serious deal or not? Because, you know, they're popping up all the time. You know what I mean? About the 26th or 27th, I can see some of my email traffic. I was telling people, how many masks do you need? And I started telling people on my live feeds, get masks, stock up on food, get water. Now, my long-term readers who've been with me for many years in different wars and whatnot, they're like, you know, because sometimes I say things that sound crazy, as you know, but then they're actually true.
You know, I listened to you saying those things on your live feed, and I was like, I don't know. I mean, it sounds like he's overreacting. I mean, look at what all these scientists are saying. But the scientists weren't being disingenuous, I don't think. I think the people I was talking to were using the data that was being given to them by China. And so they had bad data.
Lying. And I know how they lie. So whatever China said, I'm like, disregard or multiply.
Well, you're right. 10. And so this is the thing. I had a phone call today with General Robert Spalding, who's a former Air Force general. He wrote,
I know who he is. I've read his book.
Yeah, he wrote a book called Shadow War, and it says the same thing. Now, what he's saying is that I asked him this question. I want to ask you the same question. I said, is this coronavirus an intentional act of war by the Chinese? His answer was, I don't know if the virus itself was created as an intentional act, but I can promise you that the spreading of this virus was an intentional act, because the Chinese knew about person-to-person transmission way back in November, December, and they were telling the whole world that there was no person-to-person transmission, and yet they let 5 million people leave Wuhan and travel all over the world. That was intentional, and there was a reason behind it. What do you think?
That's my exact answer. I mean, I just said that something very similar on my last podcast that ended about an hour ago. I mean, I've been saying that for a while. Mm-hmm. And in their information war, is often it does not appear that their weapon is made from scratch, right? It's often either improvised post facto, or they take advantage of some ongoing circumstance. So in other words, it's like, boom, here's a moment of opportunity, take it. Then they weaponize it, right? And that's what Spalding clearly is saying with that comment. And that's what I say as well. Whether or not it was an intentional weapon to begin with is unknown to me. However, it's crystal clear it was weaponized at minimum post facto. After release, they covered everything up as much as they could. They limited travel within China. For instance, Hubei province, they locked down, 60, 80 million people? I don't recall. It was a lot. They locked them down. And meanwhile, they were letting them travel to here in Thailand, all over Europe. They let them fly to United States, of course, Los Angeles, New York, all these places, right? So, and they knew it, and they let it go, and they covered up the airborne transmission. They did all those things. They covered it up. Meanwhile, they were buying up all the PPE. Why didn't our intelligence agencies pick up on that, right? So they were buying them up too, but they were buying them up by the plane load full. So they clearly knew how bad it was because they were sending that back to China. And then later, they apparently took the same mask and re-exported those to places like Italy for a high sum. And then we're getting, like, here we are with our arm around Italy, helping them out with PPE and everything else. No, you made them pay for it, actually, and sent them a bunch of test kits that were faulty. Same with Spain, same with Czech Republic and Netherlands. Many people got these faulty test kits. I know how the Chinese operate.
Belt and Road Initiative, the Thousand Talents program, all of the things that China has been doing are clearly an organized, coordinated effort to take over the world, long-term, very intentional. And really what they try to do is, it's becoming very apparent, they work very hard to appear to be following international norms and rules while they're breaking those rules on the back end. Now, and as a matter of fact, as I was talking to General Spalding about it, I said, you know, it reminds me of a saying that I heard when I was in the Army a lot. That was, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. And if you get caught, you're not trying hard enough. And he said, that should be the national motto of China.
Oh, yeah. That's all they do is cheat. They're mega cheaters. I've been to China quite a few times. You can't trust anything from CCP. Zero. Like, for instance, I noticed a tendency. They seem to tend to, and I'm not pulling this out of thin air. I've noticed this. They tend to either exaggerate or diminish things by about a factor of 10. In other words, if they say we had, 3,000 casualties, I would say probably 30,000. Or maybe 300,000, because I've seen them do this. They do this because sometimes historically when I really dig down to something and I'm like, okay, this is the real number and it's 10 again. It's like, they just like, this is the magic number. It's like multiply by 10.
It's really amazing. It really is. And you know, what I'm seeing is that they don't, it is just endemic to their culture. They don't just cheat everybody else in the world. They cheat each other. Even inside China, if you read AI Superpower, it shows how China, their culture expects you to rip people off. Their culture expects you to break copyright or to steal somebody else's product and reverse engineer it and make it your own. And if you're not doing that, they're kind of like, what's wrong with you? Why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah, you're not in the game. You're not playing full power, unrestricted warfare, right?
Right.
That's an excellent book.
I read that in AI Superpower. It's a book. And I wanted to bring that up because the Chinese have been working very hard to become the world leaders in artificial intelligence. And then they've then embarked on a campaign to suck up as much information around the globe as absolutely humanly possible. So we're just reading, I saw a video the other day about this social media app called TikTok, where the Pentagon has banned all of its employees from having TikTok on any government phone or computer or anything like that, because this is an app that's owned by the Chinese government. And what it does is it sucks up all the information on your phone and sends it back to China. And you got to wonder, like, why would China care about the phones of all these millions of children that are playing around with stupid videos and stuff? But the bottom line is they've got the AI to sift through all that data and to come up with something that is actionable.
That's huge. I mean, having the phone data to some general's child or some CIA director's child, president's child, grandchild, that's massive. When do they order pizza? That's very useful. Take it from somebody who tracks people a lot. You know what I mean? As a writer, often I'm out somewhere doing that. And these little tiny clues, and I don't have that vacuum of AI that's like a black hole gravitational vortex of data they're collecting, for instance, off of our Zoom call or off of all the cameras around Hong Kong or all of these Facebook. And it's enormous. Like every time we go and scan our fingerprint in when we go through an airport, I mean, we're giving that data to how many governments? United States government, of course. Chinese government's going to get it one way or the other. They're going to get it. I mean, one way or the other, they've already got it. Look at Ancestry.com. Look at all these things, you know, all these DNA sites. I use those. I'm just a writer. I've used those to investigate things that I'm trying. And in fact, just yesterday. Right. So, I mean, these sorts of things are imagine if the idea that they have not penetrated Facebook or Ancestry.com or any of these is actually ludicrous. And think about these Apple computers and iPhones. Now, you see, whenever something happens in the United States, you know, and the FBI says, hey, this guy had an Apple phone, he had an iPhone, and we need to have a back door. And then there'll be this court case or whatever between Apple and the FBI, and they fight about it because Apple wants to look like, they're guarding everybody's privacy. But let's think this through a bit. You know, their machines are manufactured in China. Nobody in their right mind believes that China is manufacturing, allowing iPhones to be sold in China that don't have back doors. That doesn't make any sense for anybody that studies China. All these Apple computers and iPhones and iPads, it's actually extremely difficult to believe that they're not all total access to China. I have a hard time believing that they're not.
Okay, so I think I just wrapping it up here. You have to actually hand it to China that if China wanted to defeat the United States of America, and they pulled off a Pearl Harbor style military assault on the United States, obviously they're going to lose that battle, and it's going to be bloody, and millions of people are going to die. But instead, just like we've seen with the immigration issue, hundreds of thousands of Syrian migrants, for example, can make their way into Europe, and it can effectively invade a country without weapons, and the country has to allow them in. And now here China, right, now here China is intentionally allowing an infectious disease to spread, even though it's killing their own people, but they don't care about their own people. If they have to sacrifice 1 million or 2 million Chinese, they don't care. They're happy.
To them, it's like killing chickens. They got 1.4 billion people. If they lose 100 million of them, it's like, whatever.
They don't even care. So, just the genius behind this of they have now succeeded at shutting down the American economy. And now I read an article this morning where one scientist or doctor was saying that we need to have rolling shutdowns in the U.S. for 180 days. That's insane. But meanwhile, the Chinese factories are ramping back up. They're back up and running. And so they're getting out ahead of the United States now. If you go back 6 months ago, we were crushing the American economy with our trade war. We were crushing the Chinese economy with the trade war. We were doing a great job of that. And now look where we are. So
we were.
It is genius. You just have to hand it to China. It's evil, but it's genius. So what would you say if you had a chance to talk to President Trump? What would your advice to him be about how to fix this?
Well, let me presage that by I was saying in January and February and March, we should lock down, lock down, lock down. But now we're at this position, and our lockdown's really, in my mind, a complete failure because we're getting the worst of both worlds. We've shut down the economy, and the virus is still spread anyway. The one thing that we've clearly done is not let our hospitals be overwhelmed, which is good, at the cost of destroying our economy and giving China a strategic advantage, right? So I've changed my view based on changing realities. My view of what to do now is to people that are at risk, obese people, elderly, people with comorbidities, compromised immune systems, you need to lock down and stay and quarantine yourself, right? And then open it back up for the rest. We're going to take our casualties, period. We're going to take our casualties anyway, right? It's either now or later. And we're taking a lot right now. But if the way we're doing it now, we are absolutely crushing our economy. And it can be, if they get the upper hand, they will press it. They will try to bankrupt and lead us into civil war. And, you know, as people that have been around the United States quite a lot as Americans, you know, I could see a collapsed economy leading to internal calamity that would be so diversionary of what China is doing around our edges, like take out Taiwan, take out Hong Kong. It would be simple at that point because there's not a lot that we could do economically, right? And there's not, I mean, in militarily, we'll have our own problems internally
there will be civil unrest without a doubt if this continues. We got to open it back up. Civil unrest. I mean, there is just a very fine veneer of civility laying over the top of American culture right now, and that is wearing away very quickly. So
I realize how fragile we could be if our economy collapses. We're not Japan. You know, Japan can go, oh, our economy collapsed. We'll just work really hard and rebuild it. If our economy collapsed, a lot of these people on food stamps and everything else are not going to get fed. And you know what's going to happen? It's going to be call of the wild. You know,
failure of civility, we call it.
It's going to be, you know, you're going to need a lot of roof Koreans. Let's put it that way to guard. A lot of people are going to have to defend their property and their lives because there's a lot of, you know, we've got a lot of subcultures of people that will take advantage. And so that could be our internal problem.
Good. Well, Michael Yon, thank you for your time today. We're out of time for today's podcast, but I really appreciate you coming on with us and keep up the good work over there. Get that book translated into English so we can buy it over here, would you? So thanks again for coming on with us. We'll have you on again sometime soon. In the meantime, you guys can find Michael Yon on Facebook and Instagram and all of the social media outlets. And so I highly recommend you check him out. Check out his Patreon page.
My Patreon, if you just web search my name, Michael Yon, Y-O-N, and Patreon, my Patreon page will come up. And I really appreciate that mention, Chuck.
Sure thing. All right. Well, good talking to you. Thanks again. And God bless you. We'll be in touch.
The Hot Zone is produced by Amy Holton and Livefire Media. Copyright 2019.